Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. Yeah, we've got sunshine. Yesterday it snowed the entire time during our show, which was pretty cool to sit here and look out and see snow in Nashville on the last day of November. Not too often we ever see that. Not today, though. Still remnants on the ground. We always enjoy our conversations with our next guest. Ian Eagle will be in the booth on the call of a matchup of 2-8-3 teams, the Browns and the Titans, in Nashville at Nissan Stadium on Sunday afternoon. Ian, how you doing?
You know, it's crazy, guys. One of the coldest games that I ever worked was in Nashville, and it was snowing, and somebody ripped Eddie George's name off his jersey, and I was not prepared for the weather. That's what I recall about the game, that I went in, oh, it's Nashville. I'm good. And I got crushed.
Okay, wait a minute. Now you've piqued our interest. We've been covering the team since they've been in Nashville. So what year are we talking about? Do you remember?
If you can find the highlight, someone literally ripped his name off the jersey. And I believe that was a game that I could not feel my extremities.
Wow, now you've really piqued my curiosity. I don't remember.
They're all blending together. It's been 23 years at CBS, but I do have one very vivid memory of freezing my butt off in Nashville unexpectedly.
Wow. Well, it's going to be a cold week. I don't think it's going to fit that category by the time we get to Sunday. I think you're going to be all right. And obviously it won't be Eddie George, but maybe somebody will try to do that to Derrick Henry, similar type running backs. When you see Derrick Henry and what he's doing and following up last year's campaign, it's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm blown away, guys. And every time you think you've seen everything that he's got, all the stiff arms, the barreling through a wave of tacklers, showing off his dexterity, showing off his speed and agility, he shows you something else. That, to me, from a play-by-play match perspective, that's next level. When you go into a game knowing that you better have all of your concentration and attention poured into every play that he touches the ball because something really special and unique may happen. And that's my feeling on TV games I've done, on radio games that I've done. I feel like now, just for me on a personal level, I've had easily 10 major highlights with him, whether it be running the football, throwing the ball in the playoff game last year against Baltimore, long runs, crushing, stiff arms, you name it, he's done it. And he just does it with the same kind of approach. Like, nothing seems to ever rattle this guy. He took a hard hit last week, and a rarity. You don't see it that often. Yeah. Even that, went to the sideline, caught his breath, came back, and just gained more yards.
That's a good point. I admitted yesterday on the show, I feel watching Derrick Henry run the football now a lot like Lane Kiffin. On the college football side of things, we've all seen the shots of Lane Kiffin with his arms raised up in the air or even throwing the playbook up in the air before the pass is even made because he knows it's a touchdown. How rare is it that you can see at the NFL level, there's just times when I raise my hands up in the air, when he gets the ball, he's taking like two steps, and I'm like, I see where everybody is around him, and I'm going, that thing's going to the house. It's hard to say that in the NFL.
It is. And, you know, it's funny. When you do this kind of work year in and year out, you try to come up with creative ways to tell stories. And oftentimes, guys on our crew that do a terrific job, they locate and discover high school footage of players. And more often than not, when you play the high school footage back, you obviously know that they were just at a different level. These guys couldn't cover these players at that time, whether it's a quarterback that was running around, a running back that was plowing through the competition, and there's a discernible difference in the highlights because the speed, the size, it all catches up to them. When we do that with Derrick Henry, to me, it's not much of a difference. Like, you look at his high school footage, you're like, okay, yeah, all right, what's he going to do at Alabama? You go, oh, he just did that all over again, and he won the Heisman Trophy. Well, what's he going to do in the pros? Oh, he's doing that again, and it's the NFL, and it doesn't look that different than what the guy was doing in Yulee, Florida. And that's saying a whole lot. I don't think there are any players that you could say that about. Sometimes you get these physical forces, and he's just one of them. I don't know if we're going to get another one that's going to be just like him. He might be so unique in his skill set and his size that they broke the mold.
We had Joe Thomas on earlier in the show, longtime Browns offensive lineman, future Hall of Famer. And we were just talking about how the Titans, you know, I asked him, they're on their third left tackle this season. David Quisenberry filled in nicely. Now he's going to have his hands full with Myles Garrett, who's coming back on Sunday. But you've seen this doing these games. I've got to ask you, because we joke constantly on this show. We live here in Nashville. We've been covering this team since they've been here. You know, it's our job to cover this team, and every week we watch them and go, who is that guy? You know, I mean, it's like Breon Borders. Here's Tyrre Tart. It's like, who are these guys? I feel like we're doing another episode of the movie Major League. So what's it like, and we're covering the team, what's it like for a national guy to be doing these rosters that are constantly changing and evolving?
Yeah, when they put Serrano in the game, let me know. That's when I'm going to have to make some serious adjustments to my charts. You make a great point, and I talked to our producer earlier today. We have a Tuesday morning conversation before our game each week, and we go through storylines, we go through potential narratives that might live by the time you get there to Sunday, and sometimes they don't because other things pop up. But one thing we discussed, everybody gets caught up in the stars, and rightfully so, because there are plenty of them. This offense is stacked. We went through it last week in our open, and we revisited it during the Indianapolis game, the fact that you have Tannehill, Henry, Brown, Davis, Jonnu Smith. They've got every position covered on offense. But sometimes when you dig a little deeper, you recognize that it really does require all 53, or in the case of the Titans and all the other teams because of COVID, sometimes 60, 63, 70 players over the course of a year to contribute. So the fact that Quisenberry has stepped in and they haven't missed a beat, the Lawan injury for most teams, I'm not saying you're done, but you're going to suffer. You lose a stud left tackle. They put in Sombrilo. He does the job. They lose Sombrilo, and now Quisenberry was ready to go. Breon Borders, look, I'm going to be the first to admit it. I've been doing this league for a long time. He was not on my radar. When I had to add him to my chart, I had to go and do some more research, and it's a tremendous story. And he's making a name for himself based on an opportunity. You know, I would toss David Long Jr. into the mix as well, a sixth-round pick last year, showed some flashes, was obviously on the COVID list, comes back this past week with an opportunity for more playing time, and makes good on it. Will Compton ends up playing a lot of the snaps. David Long gets nearly half, if not more. I got to look at the numbers. And that just shows you that this team was fully prepared for what this season was going to be. You had to be flexible, you had to be fluid, and give a lot of credit to John Robinson for being ready and putting Mike Vrabel and his coaching staff in a position to succeed because of their depth.
We're talking to Ian Eagle, one of the best in the business, CBS Sports. And Ian, another person we've had many conversations with is Richard Deitch, now with The Athletic. And I've seen him chronicle you and a lot of the very busy announcers in different sports and the travel that you guys go through routinely. So I'm just curious what that's been like for you this year under the circumstances where we know you got to be really careful when you're doing this, and knock on wood, you know, you've been able to execute flawlessly so far. What kind of challenge has that been?
Yeah, it's been odd, guys, more than anything else. So the routine that you've developed over time, that's thrown out the window, and you have to come up with a new routine. So what has really been missing in this equation, and it's been missing from everybody's life, not just sportscasters, but the interaction, you're not meeting with your group. We have not had one in-person production meeting this season. You're clearly not meeting with the teams in person. You're doing it all virtually, so you got to cut through some of that and find some commonality on Zoom to feel like you're getting some stories that will resonate. And the isolation part has been very odd. You get to a city, you test for COVID, you stay in your room until you get the result back, which is usually about 24 hours later. And you're trying to follow all the rules and regulations. You don't want to be the problem at your network. And you know that sometimes it's out of your control. You're getting on an airplane. That has been very different than the 20-plus years of travel that I've done. In some ways, it's been easier. These airports have been basically empty. So getting through security, all the things that you would always build in, it's no longer a huge problem. And here's the other strange part. People have been more respectful in a way, more respectful of space, more respectful of how you line up to board a plane. We all know the feeling when the gate agent would make an announcement and everybody would get up at the same time. Right. Like, all right, let's go. But whoa, what about zones? Like, everybody now, they follow the rules. I shouldn't say everybody. Most people follow the rules, and they get up when they're instructed to do so. So it's been a very different experience, but I think, like everybody, you are just happy that the games are happening and that some form of normality is taking place on a weekly basis. But to compare what it normally is at the event, you can't. Without the stimuli of 70,000 fans and the fanfare and the buildup, it's very different. These are games, and they used to be events, and there's a clear distinction between the two. We're covering the games, and that's been terrific, but you're not feeling the same emotions that you feel during a normal season. You just can't.
What do you guys talk about in your production meetings on how you're going to present? Because you have to match. I would imagine your call isn't very different without the fans, but the camera shots and what you might emphasize when you're panning away, and you have to match that up with your call. What are those meetings like when you're trying to focus on, you know, how do you bring the game to the audience even though the atmosphere and the environment is not the same?
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of inside baseball from the play-by-play man's perspective, and this happened to me the first game of the year. I had Cleveland-Baltimore in Baltimore, and the way that things are set up at M&T Bank Stadium, the booth is right in the middle of the action. You're at the top of the first level. So when there are fans in there, they are fully engaged. You could reach out and touch them, and for a number of years, to be perfectly honest with you guys, there was a stretch where fans would turn around. They thought I was the replay official. Like, they would turn in the middle of the game, like, is that good? No good? I'm like, I'm not the replay guy. And then after a while, I just bought in. I was like, yeah, it's good. You're fine. It'll be good. So that's how close we were to the action. So you get there week one. There are no fans. It's very eerie. And the game starts, and I'm working with a new partner, Charles Davis. It's the first game we're doing, and I'm trying to figure out how the dynamic is going to be and the back and forth. And I'm giving him a lot of eye contact because it's our first game. I want to validate what he's saying. I'm nodding. I'm agreeing. I'm tagging. And meanwhile, Lamar Jackson has an option run, and I catch it a little late. So I see it on the pitch to Ingram, and Ingram loses the ball but jumps on top of it. And I'm still good with the call. But then they show the replay. And within Lamar Jackson's run, he has two beautiful moves, dazzling moves. that I did not see on the live look because I was looking at my partner. In a normal setting, the crowd is your guide. You'll get an ooh and an ah, and in that moment you'll know, oh, wait, something special just happened. I've got to adjust my voice. I've got to shift gears. And it's a cue that no longer exists. That's just not part of it. So I was taught a very valuable lesson in the first quarter of the first game that I did this year. You can't rely on certain aspects of the broadcast that you used to be able to lean on. And our production meetings, clearly, we're still talking about the same things that we would normally talk about. But you're right. There are other conversations that take place, probably more producer-director-based, on how to keep things tight and how to present the game in a way that makes people comfortable. That's the goal. And it's a slippery slope because you do want to be honest and you do want to tell the story, but you also want to make fans feel good about the presentation, about what they're seeing and the fact that they're dedicating 3 hours of their weekend to this game.
Ian Eagle is with us, the NFL on CBS. He'll be on the call for the Titans and the Browns coming up this Sunday. And as you mentioned earlier, Ian, that you talk to the coaches, and as usually it's in person. That's how it was in the olden days. Hopefully we get back to that at some point soon. It's not just Zoom. But I bring this up because yesterday we aired Mike Vrabel's press conference, and if you listen to the press conference, you would have thought they lost 45-3 after the victory over the Colts. Some coaches are like that, and as you know, in dealing with the different personalities, they handle losses differently, they handle wins differently. There's a message that they want to send to their team, and they do it whenever they crack a mic. How have you seen the coaches and how they deliver their messages change over the years since you've been doing this as a play-by-play man?
Huh, yeah, it's a great question. You know, with Mike in particular, he's a no-nonsense guy. I know you're familiar with that, and I watch the press conferences. I see how he handles the local media and the back and forth, and there's no doubt he doesn't suffer fools. If you ask a foolish question, he's not going to bail you out. If you ask a good question, odds are he's going to give you a good answer. And what I've noticed in our sit-downs, it's not personal with him. It truly is, ask something of value, I'll give you something of value back. There are other coaches that no matter what you ask, they're going to spin it the way that they want to spin it, and they're just going to give you the rhetoric that they're looking to get through the session with. Mike isn't that way. Mike is very specific, and if you ask a specific question, you will get an answer. If you're beating around the bush, if you're doing generalities, if you're asking him to basically fill in the gaps, that's not his MO. And I respect that. You know, you figure out with each coach how they like things and how they do it. What I've seen, you know, the evolution of this, they're doing so much more, and this goes the same for players. They're doing so much more during the week than they used to. The fact that in-house productions and team websites and team beat reporters are now part of this equation means that players and coaches are being pulled in so many different directions over the course of the week. I think back to when I started in 1998 with CBS, you would get a coach and a lot of the stuff was really fresh. It hadn't been covered. And now you've got to find a different angle. If you're asking the same old questions, if you're reviewing last week's game when you sit down with a coach on Friday or Saturday, you're wasting his time and you're wasting your own time. So you've just got to be smarter with the topics, and the flow of conversation is a little different. But I do think players and coaches, they just do so much now during the week, and you get them at a time later in the week where they've answered all the questions. So you better bring something a little different to the table.
So obviously being here in Nashville, we've seen the growth of the John Robinson, the Mike Vrabel era, and there are a ton of similarities that, you know, the Patriot way. I mean, that's always brought up because of the cloth that they are cut from. From your point of view, as someone that has done quite a few of these games in the last few years with those guys, have you seen the Titans maybe evolve into a Titan way with some ties to the Patriots, with some of the Belichickian type things that maybe he had that they've been able to pull away? But have you seen it change to become more of their own than just New England 2.0?
Yeah, I think, simply put, anyone that came from New England and moved on to a head coaching job, the assumption was they were going to bring some of Belichick with them. Josh McDaniels when he got to Denver, Eric Mangini when he got the Jet job, what we saw in Detroit with Matt Patricia, Flores in Miami. But the ones that have been really successful, Mike Vrabel, who was never a coach in New England, so he played there, but I think sometimes it becomes a misnomer where people just assume that it's coursing through his veins. Mike Vrabel had a lot of different experiences beyond just New England, with Pittsburgh, with Kansas City, with Ohio State, with Houston, and I see him as separate. I do think he's taken some of what he learned as a player under Belichick, but to me he brings his own identity to the mix and something that was fostered over a 14-year playing career, and someone who is a really smart football guy. But I don't think Mike, and I don't know this for certain, and I'm not sure that anyone has really delved into it with him, I don't think Mike would tell you that it's all him. He really does trust his people, and there's a lot of trust in Arthur Smith, and there's a lot of trust in Shane Bowen and Craig Aukerman and people on that staff that do a lot of quality work to put him in a position to make good decisions when it comes to going for two or going for it on fourth down. So I see it as very collaborative, and that's not to say Bill Belichick doesn't listen to his people, but I do think with Bill, oftentimes, there's a lot going on in his brain that will transpire over the course of the game. And with Mike, who's a really sharp football guy and sees all of the different elements of the game and does play it like a chessboard, but it feels like it's more collaborative, and that's based on him and who he is and what he's accomplished and having confidence in his own resume and how he got here. So I get it. I get the comparisons, and it's natural, but I really think there's more to it with Vrabel. And, you know, I don't know John Robinson, but I do respect how he's built this team and the fact that they've taken some flyers on some guys, and it's paid off. You know, this idea with Ryan Tannehill, it's amazing. I just think about his time in Miami and think about how many times I met with him through the years, and you could tell that he was trying to break through. He was certainly trying to do all the things the right way, and for whatever reason, he was held back a little bit, and it just never quite connected. And to see everything click for him the way that it has in Nashville, it's pretty amazing, and it's a testament to him and his hard work and how he's handled his business.
I can tell you without a doubt that the whole interview, I've been trying to rack my brain and figure out the Eddie George game, the cold game. There haven't been very many really, really cold
games
here.
I did not imagine this. I'm telling you it happened.
I'm going to figure this out, Ian. I'm just telling you. I don't know how long it's going to take me, but I'm going to figure out that game because right now it's not coming to me.
But
hey,
we know it has to be between 99 and 03, right?
Correct.
03 was his last year as a Titan. So,
and you said it
was
in Nashville?
Titan.
Right. Yeah, it was.
It wasn't a Tennessee Oilers game.
Now I'm questioning whether or not that happened on the road, and he had his jersey ripped up on the road, and maybe I'm conflating it with a different game that I did in Nashville that was so ridiculously cold. But my belief is that it did happen the same day. I believe I was working with Solomon Wilcox at the time, so I started working with Solomon in 01. So now we're going to narrow it down. Between
01 to 03.
Okay. Somewhere in that range. I don't think it was his last year because he was still cooking, I believe, at the time. It was still, and he had a huge game, if I remember correctly. And, man, could it possibly have been against Cleveland? I don't know. That's pushing it. I've run out of bandwidth in my brain.
I think we're all getting there, Ian. Every day we lose a little bit of bandwidth.
I'm telling you, I could have recited like every episode of The Love Boat. I can't remember three now offhand.
There's always so much space in there.
No doubt. Hey, we always enjoy the visits. Keep up the good work in the booth. We'll be certainly watching on Sunday, and we'll talk to you here soon.
All right, guys. Fun conversation. Really fun calling this team. More than anything else, it's been a ball watching them develop. So this should be a good one. Hopefully Cleveland can come in and hold up their end of the bargain, and we'll have an entertaining, competitive game.
Well, we're enjoying it. The fans are enjoying it. As we talked about a lot on the show after the press conference that you alluded to, we're not sure the head coach enjoys it because we don't know from week to week if they're 8-3 or 3-8. Just not sure.
I think deep down he is, but we alluded to it on the broadcast last week that the way things were going in the fourth quarter, that Mike was going to be able to take something out of it that he could rip into his team about, and that might be part of the motivation as well. And I see it. Big picture, he's looking to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we would certainly welcome that in this market. Ian, thanks for the visit. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. Great talking to you guys.
All right, that is Ian Eagle. He does a fantastic job in the booth. He'll be on the call on CBS, as you just heard, 23 years now with CBS, NFL on CBS, and his partner, Charles Davis. And so really good to catch up with him. We'll come back. A lot to discuss on the other side as we get a little bit closer to that game, Titans and Browns at Nissan Stadium. We will do that on the other side. But first, I want to talk to you about my friends at Cool Springs MD. Yeah, they're my friends because I've been going there for years, and they've been taking care of me for years, just like a lot of you here in Middle Tennessee. They've been in this market since 2007, and Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is the board-certified physician over there. He's certainly been taking care of a lot of people. His wife, Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff would love to improve your quality of life, just like mine. As we all get older, things start happening. Things start breaking down, and they house a lot of things under one roof. For example, if you haven't been feeling yourself, maybe you've been feeling off or been having mood swings or haven't had any energy, any drive, go in there and talk to them about hormone replacement therapy. It is natural as we get older that those levels dip, and sometimes they can dip just way too low, and they have the ability to change that, fix that, and boy, do you see a difference when that happens. So go in there. If that's been going on with you, talk to them about that. They can help you. Face and body rejuvenation is something, as we get older, that they can talk to you about. Weight loss management, hello. That's always important, but especially in this calendar year, they've got programs and people that can get you headed in the right direction. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation with these folks, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291 is how you can get in touch with them, or you can always learn everything about them by going to their website, coolspringsmd.com.
Well, I think he's definitely a candidate, especially it'll kind of come down to, in my opinion, how the season shakes out in the AFC. You know, Tennessee keeps playing the way they did last Sunday, keeps smashing full folks like they did the Colts. You got to consider him an MVP candidate because he's truly probably the most important cog on the team. That's one of the best teams in the NFL. And I think when you're an irreplaceable, one of the most important positions on your team, and your team is one of the best teams in the NFL, that's the recipe for MVP. Look at the other guys who are in that conversation right now. You know, Aaron Rodgers with the Packers. Packers, one of the best teams in the NFC. Obviously, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. And then maybe you throw in Russell Wilson or maybe somebody else kind of on the outside. Maybe Nick Chubb if the Browns keep playing and improving and finishing the way that they have been the last few weeks. I think there's a few guys, but definitely – Derrick Henry absolutely should be in that conversation.
Longtime Browns offensive lineman Joe Thomas, who joined us in the first hour of the program, talking about Derrick Henry in the MVP race. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey, smoother than smooth. Ian Eagle, he was smooth. Good interview with him to start the hour. And we did get, Elijah got a phone call during the break or during that interview when we were trying to figure out when Ian said at the beginning that he remembers, I was referencing the weather at the beginning of that interview, and he said he remembers a really, really cold game in Nashville. And I haven't, I shouldn't say here of late. I haven't been going So, but I went like 17 years. The first 17 years, I went to every home game. My attendance has been very poor in the last several years.
Had different things.
Yeah.
I have a family. So.
Yeah, and the hockey season.
Doing those Predator games. When you have to be at every Predator game, that affects.
Right, you have to change your schedule. You can't do everything like you used to. But I've been really racking my brain. Now, I will say this. The reason I'm bringing this up is because Elijah took a phone call, and on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and that phone caller referenced a game that he may have been talking about. Now, this makes sense to me because I remember well, but I'm going to let Elijah set up. So who called in, Elijah, and what did they say?
Yeah, we'll give a shout-out to Joe in Bellevue, who called in like right before the break started, and he said that in December of 2000 would have been the game because it would have been in Cleveland where it was a heavy snow where Eddie George would have had, the nameplate ripped off his jersey.
I remember that. Okay, so that changed, but that changes everything. See, we're not thinking of a road game. And Ian admitted at the end he said
it was in Nashville though.
Right, no, I know at the
beginning. But he admitted it could have been a road
game. But at the end he kind of referenced like maybe my mind's jogged, it was a road game. Now that makes a ton of sense. I remember the game well. Eddie George went nuts.
But I think you would remember that game because that was a full-on snowstorm.
Well, the reason it was a blizzard the whole game. And the reason that game stands out to me so much, one, Eddie George went nuts. I think he had the three touchdowns, almost 200 yards rushing. But, Willie, in our years of talking with Chris Sanders over the years, he has brought up – that was redundant. He has brought up and referenced that game many times as the coldest game he ever played in. Now, somebody who went to that stadium many times, Municipal Stadium, there, that big, huge stadium on the lake, which the new stadium is on the lake as well. But if people aren't familiar with – lake effect snow and that area in Cleveland, it is so incredibly cold, especially the way that setup of the old stadium, how you would have it open going out looking into the lake. Like, why would you have that portion open, which would have all that cold air coming in? Chris Sanders has told us many times it was the coldest game he ever played in. Now, that makes sense. If you're telling me a game in Cleveland, the old stadium in 2000, okay.
Might have been the new stadium,
I just think that you
actually,
would have
remembered.
Right.
The Browns were back, right? Did they came back with the new stadium?
So that would have been the new stadium.
So that would have been the new stadium, yeah.
I've got another candidate that
they came back in 99?
Yeah, that stadium opened September 12th, 1999.
Okay.
Yeah, so they would have been in the new stadium.
Throw Municipal out in the lake.
I just think he would have known if it was that unique of conditions with a snowstorm. I don't remember why. I do remember watching that game. Here's a nondescript game that might have been what Ian was. There was another matchup the following year against the Browns in Nashville. I'm looking at the weather conditions, 28 degrees, wind chill 21. The Titans were 7-7. If you remember, they had the wheels come off. They lost the last two games.
Didn't they lose to the Browns and the
They lost
Bengals?
To the Browns and the Bengals. This one was 41-38, and it was Eddie George. And this, I'm going to tie this into a discussion we had yesterday about Derrick Henry and the quote-unquote curse of 370. In the 2000 game against the Browns, Eddie George ran wild in that new stadium in the snow. Right on his way to over 400 carries. The next year, he got the turf toe and played through it. And he only had one game that whole year where he rushed for over 100 yards. Now, that's hard to believe. But it was that game against the Browns, and they lost 41-38. So that could have been the game Ian was referencing. But remember what happened to Eddie George. He went from being one of the best backs in the league from the time he was a rookie up through that year where he had over 400 carries. And then when they ended up 7-9, he averaged under 3 yards a carry, 2.98 yards per carry, and ran for 939 yards. He was just not the same.
Well,
right?
Honestly, most players wouldn't have. Today's players, a lot
wouldn't
of them, they wouldn't have played. They would have been sitting out. They wouldn't
have
even played.
You are 100% right. So it was a rough year. Now, he did bounce back. The next 2 years, he was better. but he was just never the same as he was before that. And that's why it's a big issue, right? As they balance it. It is something that is going to be followed every week. The workload of Derrick Henry, whether Mike Vrabel wants to answer the questions about it or not, whether they think it's a big deal or not, and I do think privately they are very aware of that. Now, how they choose to proceed is up to them, because I think there is logic in saying not often are you in a pennant race, or maybe you feel like you have a chance to win, so you have to do everything you can to win that year. I think maybe if you ask Derrick Henry, if you say, Derrick, would you carry the ball 30 times a game if that's what it took to win a Super Bowl this year, he'd probably say yeah.
Well, and I wonder if they have asked him that, because, you know, we've talked about before of the sometimes you have to protect the player from himself.
Exactly. I think that's a great way of putting it. I do think you have to think short term and long term.
But, right, if you have the conversation and it's like, hey, Derrick, you know what history says. You know that if we
they
run
don't
into
know
the...
anything about that, Chase. We learned that from Prescott. What are you talking about? They don't know anything about 370.
Okay, let's not get off topic again,
minute,
Derek.
No,
I know
no,
you're bugged about it.
No, Chase is acting like they're actively talking about it behind the scenes.
Well, they're not.
We know the answers of their quarterback and other people. They do think about that because Ryan Tannehill flat out said, we're trying to take some things off his plate. A couple of weeks ago. So they're familiar with the topic.
Yeah, I don't think Mike liked that he said that.
But right.
I get it. We it's well documented that Mike likes to keep everything close to the vest and behind the scenes, and he doesn't think that, you know, social media or anything exists. But on the premise that they've had these conversations behind the scenes and they sit there with Derek, and Derek's like, yeah, I understand. If I get to 370 or you know, my body's going to break down. Maybe I'm not going to be as effective, you know, beyond this year. But if this is our best chance to win a Super Bowl, then let's go.
I don't believe those conversations have. You don't have conversations with players like that. I mean, why? You know what a player's answer is. By the way, who's? It's like asking Pecorino, you want to play? You want to start this game? Or do you want to sit?
Or like a great workhorse pitcher, right? In the eighth inning, do you want to come out of the game?
Do you want 30 carries?
Can you get this next batter out?
They're
always going to say,
"I'm not saying do you want 30 carries," but I think it's, "Hey, how
you really think behind the scenes? They're going, "Hey, Derek, if we give you the ball a lot this year, we could win the Super Bowl. Are you okay with that?" You think they're having that conversation behind the scenes?
No, but I think they're having the.
Well, that's what you just said. You just brought that up. What do you mean? You just brought it up, and then you said no. You don't believe they're having that conversation? Then tell me.
Well,
where
I was
you're
also
going with that.
You cut me off too. I was also going to say that I think that there's health conversations, and it all ties in together. Like, hey, we're giving you the ball a lot. How's your body? How you feeling? Can you handle more? We're going to keep it going. I do think that those happen.
Well, remember, here's a reference in a different sport where it happened. It was very very controversial. Steven Strasburg. Remember, who's his agent? Scott Boras. And he had a year coming off of Tommy John surgery where he was pitching very well. The Nationals were in contention. And Scott Boras, famously, in cahoots with Mike Rizzo, the general manager of the Nationals, said, once he hits an innings limit, we're going to shut him down. And they did. Remember, they shut him down in a year where they were going to the playoffs. And he did not pitch in the postseason. And everybody ripped the Nationals for saying, why in the world would you do that? You play to try to win the World Series. This is one of your best pitchers. And the Nationals were saying, we're looking long term. We're looking out for his career, and we'll be back. And that looked really dumb for a long time until they finally
won it
last year. Now, that was a long time afterwards. But you see the dilemma. But that was a team trying to think long term and not short term. And I think there have been a lot of teams that have said, screw it. We got the weapon. Let's run them into the ground to try to win this year. And with running backs, it takes its toll. There wouldn't be a curse of 370 if that weren't the case. So I just think it's a great, difficult dilemma that you do have to have discussions with, even if it's not directly with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry will do anything you ask him to do to help win the game.
A player is not going to tell you he can't go. He's not going to tell you about his health. He's not going to tell you that he wants less carries.
Yeah, he wants the ball more. I'm sure he wants the ball more. But I do. Chase used the term that I think is the right one, and that is you have to save the player from himself a little bit. Unless you just want to be hardcore, because they've set it up contractually.
If you're saving them from himself, then you're not having a conversation with them. You're making that decision for them.
So you just think
it's preserving your asset for as long as possible.
Right, then you're not having a conversation. You're just making the decision.
No, I don't think they're having it with Derrick Henry. I'm saying, though, that I do think it would make sense to have conversations like that of how do we get the most out of this guy? How do we balance it? Right?
So you don't think there's ever a conversation with a trainer or a strength coach or, hey, how you feeling? Hey, what's anything hurting? Anything we can work on? You know, you don't think there's any of that?
I think that I don't know if that's exactly the same thing.
That's totally different. You're asking, is there something bothering me? No, you were painting the picture. They're sitting down with Derrick Henry and going, hey, how you feeling? Are you okay if we up your carries to 30 a game? Hey, if we can win a Super Bowl. Now, those conversations are not happening. Now you went to that to a trainer. A trainer's talking to players every day. They talk to every player every day. How you feeling? Was something bothering you? Hey, this happened in the game. Is that still bothering you? Do we need to work on that? Those conversations take place every single day.
Right, and then it goes back to the head coach. So, I mean, it's information.
Right, but you're painting two different stories. You're painting that they're sitting down with Derrick Henry, and now you're talking about Derrick Henry and a trainer. Those are two completely different stories, completely different setups to a story.
And look, here's the bottom line. We don't know what happens behind those walls. Maybe they are. You say that there's no way they're having those kind of conversations, and you might be right. But you also may be wrong that they do, that he is more involved than you think he is. So I don't know, but
I've talked to enough players and coaches and trainers over the years. I kind of know how this works, and yeah, you're right. Things do change. Every system's different. Every coach, every staff is different. But by and large, 98% of the time, they're talking to players on workload or do you want to play. I mean, you know, they may ask them if they're dealing with a serious injury. Can you go? I mean, those conversations have to take place before a game with walkthroughs.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think there's a difference between the two. But I think this is the bottom line, is he's got 256 carries through 11 games, most in the NFL. We know that 370 is the danger zone, right? History has shown. So what it amounts to is you got about 100 carries to work with over the next 5 weeks. About 100, right? Give or take one or two. So it's an average of about 20 per game. So I do think that's a good mindset to have. And if you can find a series here or there to take the workload down when the situation prevents itself, that is going to help you long term. You don't do it at the expense of winning a game. But for example, I thought it was a very curious decision to give him the 6 carries in the fourth quarter when they're up 38-20. They gave him the ball 6 times in the same drive to eat the clock when they were up by 18 points. Now, you can say, well, hey, that game wasn't quite over. Yeah. I don't know. We don't have the best defense in the world here if they score again. But I think maybe could you have dialed it down a little bit there? So that's something I think to think about in the last 5 games. Can they keep the carries at about 100? About 20 per game over the last 5 games. That would keep them out of that 370 zone.
Yeah, I go back to yesterday. I mean, I don't know if you listen to the head coach. I don't know how much they care about 370 or how much that is factored in at all.
I don't believe that.
I don't either, but I'm just going by the head coach's words.
Yeah.
I think we know better.
But I also think there is that, you know, at some point you have to go, all right, we're going for it. So,
and they did the last 2 games. I think they made that decision. Just, hey, these are 2 huge games. Our season may be on the line here. We got to go to the well here.
And it ties back in. I always reference this. It ties back to what Nick Saban told you guys. The more you feed him the ball, the better he gets. And as the season goes on, the more he's getting the ball, the better he gets. We've seen it over the last 3 years that he goes to another gear. And I think they know that, and they know that him doing that is their best chance to win.
That was the case with Eddie George.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hit that level, the 403. Now, Teron had a great theory. I would love to see a study done on this. You know, he said, what about running backs that get it well over 300 times? Maybe they don't hit 370, but if you have like three or four straight years of well over 300, how does that affect things? But we know that there is a shelf life with great power backs, right? And you don't have them forever. So how do you get the most out of them at the time but still preserve as much long-term as you can? Would we agree, if he's not the MVP, this is where we started the segment, I think Derrick Henry is the MVP of anybody who is not a quarterback in the league.
I would agree.
Would you say, I mean, who else would be more valuable?
Look, we know running backs, he's got that. Would there be any probably not.
Jeff Fisher suggested Aaron Donald as a candidate a few weeks ago when we had him on.
Yep.
He's a game changer, perhaps. So that's a good one. I still would vote for Derrick Henry. Ian Eagle had a great illustration of that. He said, when you are lining up every play against the Titans and Derrick Henry is on the field, you have to focus all your attention on him because at any time he can do something special. He could score from any yard line on the field. And he's such a big guy that he can have that impactful run that jacks everybody up on the sideline. There's just so few players that do that. It's the mental strain that he puts on a defense. And he makes everybody else on the team better. I think he's the MVP, except for quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are so important.
I just don't understand why we feel the need that it's always got to be a quarterback for the most part, unless a guy flirts with 2,000 yards. I don't understand that. I mean,
it just all
these players are just as vitally important. I mean, Travis Kelce is the MVP of tight ends in the league. He is almost an unstoppable force. And has been for years. Aaron Donald is an unstoppable force. He is a disruptor. He is an MVP candidate. I don't understand why we feel this need. It's always got to be a quarterback.
Yeah, and the last time it wasn't was 06.
Right, which we talked about.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's just – I mean, what is a guy – if. I mean, you can't tell me Derrick Henry was not the MVP. How could he not have been an MVP? He led the league in rushing, and I know that the playoff run has nothing to do with it, but and they were probably he gets penalized because they were, what, a 9-7 team. But, I mean, Derrick Henry led the league in rushing, and he was MVP. Look at his December last year. I mean,
well, he took it up such a huge
He took over the NFL. And then the playoffs go without saying, but you can't factor that in. And a team that went to the AFC Championship game, I don't know why we just feel the need that it's always got to be a quarterback. I understand that they touch it, but okay. So then the MVP, and I guess they've got a separate. Maybe we need to do it like baseball. Maybe there needs to be separate awards.
Well, but
maybe there needs to be a quarterback award.
He's only on the field about 60-65% of the time. So you have to.
So why does he get penalized for that? So only quarterbacks should apply because they get the ball more than anybody else.
Okay,
then let's have a quarterback award and then an MVP award.
But
for everybody else,
I thought about that, like a Cy Young in baseball.
That's why I said in baseball they give a pitcher because we know who touches the ball more than anybody else, a pitcher and the catcher, right? But pitcher, especially, they get paid the big bucks, so they have a Cy Young award and then they have an MVP. So why not do a separate award? Like, let's do a quarterback MVP, a quarterback MVP award, and then an MVP of the league.
Well,
for
the quarterback is so important, though. We know that. Like, it's hard to have watched Patrick Mahomes the last two games. The game against Vegas on the Sunday night and the game against the Bucks on Sunday. It's hard not to say he's not the best player in the game.
But it's not fair to everybody else because he does have the ball every single play. And, yes, he is the most valuable player in the league. He is. But why should everybody else get penalized? They can't control, right? Like a Travis Kelce, an Aaron Donald, a Derrick Henry, and whatever receiver we want to throw in there. Why do they get penalized? Because it's out of their control.
But I feel like it's also changed. I looked this up. So from 1980 to 2000, there were 9 MVPs that were not quarterbacks. A lot of running backs, a couple wide receivers, even a kicker in 1982. Okay. And then from
I still don't understand that one. Mark Mosley?
Yeah, Mark Mosley. And then 2000 to now, I mean, you had Sean Alexander, LT, Marshall Faulk before that, Adrian Peterson were all non-quarterbacks. It's just the numbers have dropped. And I feel like the talent is still there. It just seemed like before 2000 there was more of an acknowledgement of non-quarterbacks. Still a ton of quarterbacks winning the MVP.
Well,
Favre had his three.
Do we think the quarterback has just become more important to every team?
No.
But it's always
been important. No.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The game has changed.
The rules have changed.
The importance of the quarterback has gone up.
Yeah, because why? You don't have – we already discussed this. I said I don't believe that running backs take the beating that the past running backs took. I don't think 370 – I'm not saying it's not relevant. It is relevant. I don't believe it's as relevant as it used to be because – these players do not take the pounding that players from the past, the old rules, took.
Yeah.
So I think they're able to preserve their body a little bit better.
I think that's a great – I would love to see somebody do like a research paper on that because I'm not sure I buy that. You might be right, Darren, but players are bigger. Players are faster. They're stronger than they were in Earl Campbell's day. You know, there's simply – there's more mass there. So I don't know. If you carry a 370, you carry a 370. You're taking those hits.
Players could lead with their helmet. Players could do all kinds of things they cannot do now.
But
any
still,
big hit
still,
today draws a flag. Big hits back then were celebrated.
But how
today,
many times do you see
a
running back draw a flag for unnecessary roughness? It doesn't happen very often. They get tackled. They get gang tackled. It usually takes two or three guys to get Derrick Henry down. He gets hit more than once on many, many plays that he carries the ball.
I misspoke earlier. Adrian Peterson was the last non-quarterback in 2012 to win it. And, last year people make the joke of, well, running back won it last year. But we know he was a quarterback. But, yeah, 2012 was AD with the Vikings. But the game has changed, but I still think that you gotta look at other positions other than quarterback of being in consideration for MVP.
I think you should. It's time to give them their own category. Like, we get it. They handle it the most. Today's game, they sling it around the most. Their stats are the gaudiest. Then let's give them a separate award, and then let's crown somebody else an MVP.
I'd go for that. I'd go for that.
All right. I want to talk to you about some college basketball. Right now, watching Texas and Indiana. You've got Michigan State and Duke tonight. You've got Kansas and Kentucky. How about this? Gonzaga and Baylor about to square off. They're going to go toe-to-toe in what could be the top nation's top ranking in college basketball. That's what they're going for. Gonzaga, everybody's very, very high on them. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving all you college basketball fans who sign up right now the chance to win $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win this big matchup. Plus, you'll get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 when signing up and using the promo code 1025GAME. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME, and when you sign up, you'll have your shot to put $1 to win $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win. That code again, 1025GAME, during sign-up for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. You can see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.